It can't be misogynist if it's between two women. It can't have toxic masculinity if it's between two women. In my experience, that's just fundamentally not true. And I think part of that is because we have to all learn that we all grew up in a patriarchal society. Like, the patriarchy lives within us.
This is Unladylike. I'm Kristen. And today is an unprecedented edition of Ask Unladylike, where we answer listeners' questions that Google, and sometimes even Unladylike, has a bit of trouble with. The reason this is an unprecedented Ask Unladylike is because, for the very first time ever, we are re-asking and re-answering a listener's question. To explain, we must go back to November 2022. That is when an episode published titled Ask Unladylike, Butch Girlfriends, and Child-Free Stepmoms. The Child-Free Stepmoms part of that episode, totally fine. I stand by that. The Butch Girlfriends part of the episode, not so great. For instance, an unlady named Zahara wrote in and said, I've been listening to Unladylike since before it was unladylike and usually feel refreshed by the well-thought-out feminist and intersectional perspective. However, as a queer woman, I was really unsettled by your Ask Unladylike episode regarding Butch girlfriends. Unladies, we are going to hear more about why exactly Zahara was unsettled a little later in the episode. But Zahara also had some advice for me. Please consider reading about how masculine and feminine roles affect queer issues in the LGBTQIA community. I know there was a Butch Please, Butch with a Side of Misogyny piece in Autostraddle that may be a good place to start. So I took Zahara's advice, popped over to Autostraddle, and read that piece, Butch with a Side of Misogyny. And that piece was from way back in 2013. It was written by Kate Severance, and I was not able to track down Kate. But I do have not one, but two guests with me who I think are pretty perfectly positioned to help us tackle this question again.
I am Carmen Phillips, the editor-in-chief of Autostraddle.com. Autostraddle is a website for queer people and trans people of all genders that kind of looks at culture, society, and politics. The reason I got into this was actually I was a longtime Autostraddle reader. I have a PhD in American studies, but had never thought about kind of more public-facing writing as opposed to academic writing, and got really excited by just the concept of being a part of my community in a much more tangible way than I was being able to have in my past life.
Amiko Hall, they, them, and I am, in terms of my role at Autostraddle, I am in charge of membership editorial, and a huge aspect of that is advice. So that's something I'm actually really passionate about. Is queer people sort of crowdsourcing and queering the ways that we approach our interpersonal, individual, and what we're facing as like queer people on a day-to-day basis.
And ladies, I knew that Carmen and Nico were going to bring a much more nuanced and compassionate perspective to the question you're about to hear. So let's just dive into this advice question we received from an unlady named Emma, wrote in with the following advice request. I'm a queer woman in my mid-30s, and recently I've started dating a woman who identifies strongly with masculinity and being butch. This is a new dynamic for me, and I'm finding myself frustrated with how essentializing the butch femme roles can feel. I don't do things in a particular way because I'm femme. My gender presentation has nothing to do with how I show up in a relationship or how I treat other people. But for my girlfriend, she wants to embody a certain kind of masculinity that's all about chivalry and caretaking. And that in itself is wonderful, but why does it have to be connected to gender presentation? I find myself wishing that she would just say she likes being a caretaker instead of it being about masculinity. I'm trying to figure out how to approach the topic with her in a way that isn't asking her to change part of her identity, but still kind of calls her out on what I see as a replication of gender essentialist norms that I really didn't think I would ever have to deal with in a lesbian relationship. So we got a lot going on there with Emma. I want to first ask if Emma's advice question sounds at all familiar. Does this resonate at all with the advice requests that Autostraddle fields?
Well, I think not only does it sound familiar in terms of advice, I think this question asking about gender essentialism and butch femme dynamics is one that has come up for decades and repeatedly.
I would agree with Nico. I think it is just, it's a very kind of tail old question. I identify as cisgender. My pronouns are she and her. I also identify as femme. I've often had mask or butch partners. So like right off the bat can really relate to this question. And as someone who identifies as queer in a way that I do hope to be like kind of gender non-normative, it can feel very stifling sometimes when you are in a relationship that, at least in my experience, also from the outside, people look at it and assume, oh, you play this role, or oh, you do that role. I think kind of any gay person has had the who's really the lady in your relationship kind of vibe, right? So in that way, I think automatically those are things that are coming out for me. Obviously, in this moment, the letter writer is asking about something internal, right? Not necessarily how other people are perceiving her relationship. But for me, those can be very related, because if you've kind of built your identity and understanding it one way, it can feel boxed in potentially.
And Nico, what about you?
What I'm getting from this is a sense that Emma is interested in sort of divesting like her presentation completely from like any kind of like roles or expectations. And her partner, the person she's dating, is interested in exploring masculinity and also masculinity as like tied to certain actions or roles. And that is like part of what's creating friction. I identify as like genderqueer, gender fluid. Sometimes I occupy a more mask of center space. But I also like to say that like cis people also have a gender and like can have a relationship to their gender, right? And I think a lot of, you know, especially women definitely understand that and feel that, right? So yeah, that's sort of what I'm seeing there is that this feels very early days in terms of them having deeper discussions that I would encourage them to have as a couple.
Nico, I'm also curious if in sometimes occupying a more masculine space or identity, if you have ever found yourself kind of bumping up against butch becoming more of like gender normative in a way.
I think that's really interesting because there's like this total web of the one-to-one, right? Within a relationship, but then there's also everyone else who is perceiving you when you are out in the world and how that affects how you are acting. So like, for example, sometimes when I've dated more butch people and I'm out in the world with them and I'm perceived of as more femme, people will put those like normative hetero roles on us, right? Even though that might not be the case with how we show up in any kind of way within the relationship or alone. And I deeply identify with the letter writer in that case. And then also, you know, when I've occupied like a more masculine space, it sometimes is interesting to see how people respond to me and treat me as a more masculine or even like man-aligned person in that. And then also there is always a interesting dance between positive aspects of masculinity, like the caregiving and other things that this partner might be expressing that they find validating about masculinity and that they want to embody. And then toxic masculinity that can often show up individually in like Mask of Center queers or like butch spaces where people can be dismissive or objectifying of more femme people. Or I've had conversations with butch people about like this like temptation around the validation from cis men, because there's this sort of desire to, in terms of like my gender identity, this desire to be validated and accepted and seen as one of the boys, when a lot of socialization that comes with being one of the boys involves toxic masculinity. And so some people give into that. Some people are tempted by it. Sometimes you have to actively resist that. And also seeing like that as maybe like a concern that the letter writer has and maybe something that she's experienced in the past and is worried about.
And ladies, I am so excited to tell y'all about my new favorite body care lineup from Oak Essentials. Oak Essentials is made by the same team behind Jenny Kane, so you know it's gonna be good stuff. The other day, I received a gorgeous package containing a luminous body lotion, Awaken body wash, and their moisture-rich balm. Now, this moisture-rich balm, y'all, last night before I went to bed, I used a generous amount all over my face. And when I tell you I woke up still looking hydrated, I was shocked. So what did I do in the morning? I put on a little bit more moisture-rich balm. This balm is gonna make you never want to wear makeup again. My skin is very sensitive, especially to new products, but Oak Essentials is A-okay for me because it only uses the best ingredients. So in the balm, we're talking about sea buckthorn fruit oil, which is the highest vegetal source of vitamin C, E, and unsaturated fatty acids. It's also got some organic cocoa seed butter that is exceptionally high in antioxidants, and organic cocoa oil with high levels of linoleic acid, which is a good emollient and skin smoother. Treat yourself or someone else this season. And ladies, you're going to get 15% off and a free organic honey-based restorative mask with your first order when you use code UNLADYLIKE at checkout. That's 15% off plus a gift with your first order at OAKESSENTILS.com, promo code UNLADYLIKE. That's oakessentials.com/unladylike. Go ahead and treat yourself. From luxurious skincare to meaningful self-care, you deserve it.
I also want to kind of hop in here too, because Nico kind of left me with two train of thoughts that feel really relevant to the letter. The first train of thought is thinking about the ways in which we understand masculinity in queer communities and kind of in, for lack of a more unifying term, like sapphic queer communities. And part of what I was immediately thinking about was, yes, there's absolutely, you know, dangers around like toxic masculinity, which we don't talk about enough, I think, within queer spaces, right? Like we often think of that as like a cis man's problem. But I think Nico's absolutely right. There are ways that like a desire to kind of be validated, to be seen as one of the boys, can cause that. I also am thinking about, in relationship to the partner, there is kind of a long-term history of how we've kind of, the stereotype of like a helpful butch, right? There is a long-standing pride, I think, in queer masculinity, in being a caretaker. And I can understand for someone who is exploring their masculinity, finding connection there, finding that pride there. So that was kind of my first thought when Nico was talking. I was like, I do think there is danger, obviously, in perhaps always kind of being like the idea of, I want to be one of the guys, I want to be seen as one of the guys, and how that can feel alarming or fearful, especially for those of us who are the partner on the other side of that. But also, I think there's a lot of pride in being able to take care of your loved ones. And I think that historically, again, wish there was a more unifying term than broadly sapphic, but like in these community, in our communities, there is a sense of pride in that, in ability to be able to be, you know, a helpful dyke, to be able to take care of your partner, whether, and not necessarily, I think, in traditional ways of like taking care of them around the house, but, you know, being the helpful partner who takes out trash or who cooks or who does the laundry. I feel like a lot of times the ways in which we queer that expectation is a lot of the butches I know are primary caretakers, even in domestic roles, right? They are often the cooks. They are often people who do the laundry. I can understand the draw of that. I can also understand how it's essentializing, for sure. And that brings me to my other train of thought, which, as Nico was talking, I kept rereading the letter. And there's a sentence that goes, my gender presentation has nothing to do with how I show up in a relationship, or how I treat other people. And that to me felt like such a core part of where the letter writer is entering the space from. For them, their personality, right? How they show up for their partner, which I am sure is equally caring. I am sure they're a beautiful caretaker. If you love someone, you do want to take care of them. That for them is not tied to a gender role of, I believe this person identifies as femme, or at least is perceived as femme. I do those things. I don't think of them as femme when I do them. I think of them as something I want to do because I'm a good person, right? Like, I want to be a good friend. I want to show up for my friends. I want to be smart and helpful and attentive because I love you. And it is important to me to show up for the people I love. And that's not necessarily tied to my gender presentation. So I can understand how, if you're approaching it that way, right, you're like, this is how I do things because you're my partner. It does not have to do with like, oh, you're my butch and I'm your femme and that's how we take care of each other. It has to do with, I'm a human, you're a human, we love each other. Or I don't want to put love on a relationship. I think they said they've recently started dating. So we care for each other, right? Like, we are people who are caring for each other. Part of that for me is also thinking about, like, again, there is a reason that for some people, I don't want to speak for this partner, I don't know them, but for some people, they reach for butch and femme dynamics because they have historical roots in our community. And we are a community that does not have a lot of obvious roots that get taught in school or were taught as children. Or, you know, I think we have to self-teach it. We learn it ourselves. We learn it online. We learn it from talking to elders in our community. And we grasp onto it because it's something that's ours. So I think it's also worth thinking about that and kind of approaching your partner with an understanding of that history and a respect for it and kind of where it's taken us. That doesn't mean it needs to be the history that continues. I don't think we need to like hold strong to like 1950s ideas of understandings of like what it means to be a butch or a femme in a couple. But I think it's worth understanding why those roots have meaning. It can be helpful in approaching a conversation.
If you can get your hands on it, you might have to go to a library, but I recommend the book Boots of Leather, Slippers of Gold, which is about the butch and femme lesbian community in Buffalo, New York in the 1940s and 50s, and how lesbian as a broad term, because like in the older definition of lesbian, it was more like about a sapphic community. It was inclusive of bisexuals. It was inclusive of trans people. But talking about how there are these working class roots of resistance against the heteropatriarchy in the lesbian community in Rust Belt cities that are really important to our understandings of where butch and femme come from. And part of the role that butchness played, and I think continues to play, was in terms of signaling what was a queer space and where were lesbian people or queer people congregating in order to socialize, in order to form intimate connections, in order to form connections outside of the prescribed cishet nuclear family that allowed them to care for each other. And I think also, like, there's a temptation, I think, with all of the toxic masculinity that can show up. As much as we try to divest from the patriarchy, we still live in it and are touched by it. And that work is ongoing. But there's an exchange for that visibility. Like, something I definitely notice in my life is that I exchange a certain level of safety in order to have that visibility, right? Like, when I am out in the world, and I live in Pennsylvania, so like when I'm out in the world and I am like presenting as more masc or like very visibly queer, you know, it can lead to anything from just like less friendly interactions to, you know, outright harassment that is pretty physically threatening. And that, I think, is also something that is very tied into Butch and Mask and Stud pride, is the sense that you are staying true to yourself in spite of pushback from people who are homophobic and, you know, being visible as a queer person and as a member of your community. So in that way, aesthetics can be aesthetics, but they can also be tools socially, right?
I just wanted to first say Nico and I are actually both from Buffalo, New York, which is a fun fact. It is not the biggest city, but its lesbian roots run deep. And I'm super proud that Nico and I both are from that area. And really grateful that Nico brought up boots of leather, slippers of gold, because I think part of what I always try and think about, I am very femme presenting. If I do not audibly out myself, I am not often read as queer. And I think particularly if I'm by myself, if I'm just, again, like if it's a road trip, if I'm ducking in somewhere. And for me, I always recognize the privilege of that. It is a safety privilege. It does, as Nico said, like it's a double-sided coin. If that means I am constantly always coming out. My queerness does not necessarily like read itself. I am constantly coming out or being erased. If I'm not coming out, then that means I will not be seen. And I know that also I'm Afro-Latina, I'm Black for people who can't see me. And obviously race plays into that too. And I think it's important also when we're thinking about who our partners are, the ways that they walk into a space that may be different than how you do and how that changes their perceptions of how they're seen out in the world, but how they're seen at home. And how they want to be seen at home. And I think that kind of also gets back into the letter writer's question. And that does not mean, to be clear, that the letter writer is doing anything wrong. I don't think that at all. I think that there's a real middle ground that can be found here. But it might be helpful as part of that to think about, always in any relationship, like what your partner goes through in a day-to-day that might be different than how your day goes and how they are seen or how they walk into spaces that might be different than how you do.
As I told y'all, this is actually the second time we are answering this question on the podcast. The first time around, it left a number of femme listeners in particular very frustrated. And I'll just pull from what one of them had to say. You suggested, you being me, you suggested that since it's a queer relationship, its mask femme roles inherently can't be problematic. And they go on to say there's a huge problem in the queer community with femme women being patronized, objectified, and silenced by mask women in both queer spaces in relationships. Mask women often excuse their behavior by saying, we're both women, so it can't be misogyny.
I just want to say I agree with that listener. So we have to pay close attention to that. I think particularly in queer spaces, because it's so easy not to, right? Like it's so easy to save your righteous feminist anger for like heterosexual cis spaces where it feels like an alarm that's ringing and not in queer or in trans spaces where you feel safer. But it's so easy for us to not think about it. And that's dangerous, I would say, because it allows for things to go unchecked. That is not like a lecture for me to give to one person or another. Like we all have to do that. We all have to be thinking about how do we understand femininity? How do we understand masculinity, particularly in spaces when quote unquote cis men are not around? How are we interrogating that? How are we paying attention? And so I think the first thing that we have to recognize is that undoing that project is going to be a lifelong goal. It is not a mountaintop you reach and then you're like, I did it. I ended the patriarchy. I never have to think about it again. It does not work that way. Misogyny does not work that way. And I hope that also in relationship to Emma's letter, that part of what we're doing here is I say that as a femme person with an abundance of love, that is also important to pay attention and think about how things might be different for your partner than are for you. And using that as the first step to a conversation. Because ultimately, if what's happening in your relationship isn't working for you, that is what matters. But how do we fix it in a way that still is centering community care? And I think part of that has to come with, yes, unconscious bias around gender roles can exist in your relationship. And how your partner understands their gender might be different from how you're understanding yours and how it relates to your daily life versus how it relates to their daily life. all of those things feel true to me at the same time. I realize that's a lot for one person to have to hold going into a conversation, but that would be kind of where I would start from.
Wow. Thank you, Carmen. That was beautiful. In terms of having conversations with your partner, thank you for that perspective in terms of thinking about how your partner moves through the world. And I think also thinking about how your femme partner moves through the world is really important. And there are all kinds of intersections of identity, right, that are always at play in any relationship. And everyone is experiencing the world differently. I think also something that is perhaps helpful if you each have maybe some discomfort around, or maybe just need some ways to start conversations, I would encourage you to explore learning about gender and queerness together. Maybe find some articles each that you feel speak to you, send them to the other person. You both read all of them. Now you have a jumping off point to start having discussion, because I think that it can be pretty intimidating, especially as somebody with a sort of non-cis gender, is when somebody sits me down, and I'm not saying that this butch person or mask person is not cis, because I think they are, but it's when somebody sits me down and says, explain. that's hard, especially when it's just in the middle of, we're hanging out, we're at brunch, and they just turn to me, and I'm just it's very intimidating. So I think that using the resources that are out there already for you is a great way to have conversations that are more about reaching a mutual understanding as a goal, going back to centering care, your goal is not to just railroad and get your way, right? Your goal is to work together to both wind up in a better place. And, Carmen just spoke so beautifully too about centering care.
And I also think that is, again, to your listener who wrote in previously, for me, that's part of, as a feminist, how I also unthink about patriarchy, right? Because so much of toxic masculinity and patriarchal values are based in something that's top down, right? It's based in fighting. It's based in having an aggression between you. And I think so often part of what I think of, at least as part of my feminism, is how do we dismantle that? And so for me, part of that is the teamwork. And I don't mean that in any way that's gender essentialist. I mean that in as a human, let's work on this together. This thing is in front of us. How can we solve this? We both care for each other, but we are not ascribing that care in ways that make sense to each other or that feel comfortable for each other. How do we fix that? How do we start talking about what each other feels? That seems like a great start. Hopefully maybe this podcast will be useful. Maybe you and your partner can listen to this podcast together.
What I'm hearing from y'all's advice is, even though it is focused on this particular relationship, the wider message is still community.
Yeah, I think so. I think for me, that is also, for me, community care is such a center part of my politics. But for me, I think so. I think that is I would hope that any relationship I ever enter into, I can walk away from it learning something about how to be better and how I show up in whatever I'm doing next. That is something that for me is always a lifelong project. I always want to, my friends make fun of me because it's very corny, but one of my favorite sayings is "know better, do better." So you can't fault what you didn't know, right? If you didn't know it, you didn't know it. But I hope that once I know it, that one of my goals is to always do better by it. And so that, I don't know. Yeah, I agree with you. And I'm glad to know that that came across, because that is definitely how I try to approach things. And, also, no matter what, you're going to also have so many other relationships with people, be it romantic, be it platonic, a workplace relationship, what have you. And being able to have those kind of conversations and building the toolbox around how to do it is just such a good life skill.
I think also one thing I'm reading in this question is a sense that feminist is maybe a default, but there's no default, right? Gender is a construct. Everything is put on, just dropping gender as a construct last minute, but everything is put on. Everything is in, everything comes from somewhere. and sort of doing whatever you can to understand the various life experiences and circumstances and perspectives that people might be bringing to the table in a career space will help you to form deeper bonds with people in ways that we really need to, especially in a super and in, you know, a super hostile world right now, right? Like, we need to be forming bonds with each other centered around community care, around mutual aid, and around approaching each other with an attempt to understand each other instead of like an attempt to draw lines of conflict, right, within our communities. So yeah, I just, you know, wholeheartedly agree with Carmen and like think that it's super important to, no matter, you know, regardless also in any relationship or in any friendship or in any space that you're in, self-education is ongoing and there's always more to learn.
Thank you so much to Carmen Phillips and Nico Hall of Autostraddle. You can find them and their work and the whole community over at autostraddle.com. Thank you as well to Unlady Zahara, even though I know it has been a while. Trust me when I tell you that this episode is one I have been wanting to make happen ever since you wrote in. I also want to share with y'all a little update from our letter writer. So after the first go around and I heard from Zahara, I reached directly out to the letter writer and apologized, checked in. Just so you know, they, by that point, had moved on from the relationship. They decided that the dynamic was just not for them. And like Zahara, they listened to the first Ask Unladylike and wrote, "It felt very dismissive of my experience and concerns and ignored a lot of exactly what listener Zahara articulated. If you'd included a femme voice in the conversation, it would have been richer and more nuanced, which is always good." So, dear letter writer, if you are listening, I hope that this go-around was more satisfying. Even though, yes, I know, you've moved on from the relationship. You can follow Unladylike on Instagram and TikTok at Unladylike Media. And over in the Unladies Room Patreon, you can hear one of my very favorite interviews. It is with Sukjit Kaur Khalsa, who, if you listened to way back in the day, our body hair three-parter, Sukjit is our guest in part three of that. And if you want to just radically reframe your relationship to body hair, I cannot recommend this interview enough. Or of course, you can go back and listen to the How to Wear Body Hair three-part series. Yes, that's fine as well. But there is so much in this conversation with Sukjit that did not make it to the main feed episode. Oh, and I've been dropping Patreon teasers in the main feed. And to the Spotify commenter who said, "I hate the teasers. Why can't we just hear the full episode?" Answer, you can on Patreon. That's right. Some things gotta be paywalled because podcasters have to eat too. So if you want to listen to that, join the Patreon. Come on into the Unladies Room. It is $5 a month, and that support is so vitally important to making this podcast happen. Patreon.com/unladylikemedia is where you can go and subscribe, or you can search Unladylike Media in the Patreon app. Unladylike is an Unladylike Media production, executive produced, written, hosted, and edited by me, Kristen Conger. Engineering is by Amita Ganatra. Our music is by Flamingo Shadow, Amit May Cohen, and Sarah Tudson. Until next week, what is the most unladylike thing about you?
Immediately, this is more of a story about my childhood than an answer to what's unladylike about me. But I went to Catholic school as a child, and immediately when you asked that, I thought about our announcements every morning the senior class president got the honor of doing the morning announcements. My senior year, the senior class president ended up coming out as gay a few years after high school, as did I. But at the time, neither one of us was out, and she would start every announcement with "to all my ladies and my unladies." And I thought it was just so, I didn't really get it yet. I was 17, so I wasn't, where I am now. But I remember at the time I thought it was so cool. I remember thinking that is such a fun way to start this. And now looking back, I always wonder, did they know what they were doing when they did it? But I always wondered. So anyway, that's my fun story. I know it doesn't quite answer your question, but I'm glad I got it in there.
I love that. I don't think I've ever heard of another unlady in the wild.
Yeah, I think that they were, I do think part of it was for jokes, were kind of yeah, but it's still. So anyway, that's what it made me think of.
I feel, okay, so in terms of the most unladylike thing about me, I feel like I have been in, not my current job, but in previous jobs, been written up by cis men for being too aggressive a couple of times. And I think that is because they have certain expectations about how I'm going to show up in a room. And when I don't show up that way, it's highly disconcerting, even if I am less aggressive than male colleagues.